Welcome back to The Ownership Economy. This week, Jawhead and Martin sit down with Tyler Morey of Upside Co-op. In the conversation, they cover how difficult it really is for companies to share their equity with a large amount of stakeholders, the state of the art for equity ownership for SMEs, ESOPs, and legal structures, and the innovations that Upside Co-op is unlocking by making legal innovation broadly accessible with the Hedera blockchain and ecosystem. We hope you enjoy the episode. Don't forget to like and follow.
Hey, Tyler, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, you know, good to be here. I'm excited. Thanks for having me on. Let's talk co-ops and stuff.
Yeah, man, let's do it. You know, that's a big topic here, if you haven't noticed. But yeah, so we like to start this thing off by just having you tell us a bit about yourself. So can you tell us, where does your story start with respect to Web3, crypto, co-ops, wherever you want to start?
Yeah, no, actually starts back in the traditional financial world. I think there's actually a lot of us that came from TradFi, right, that moved our way into Web3. But I was in valuation work. So, you know, I worked on a lot of startups doing 409A type valuations and, you know, things that those of us in the startup world are going to recognize. And then a lot of other very different things. Complex financial instruments was one of my specialties. I got really deep into equity and, you know, understanding not just ins and outs, but all the different ways in which people actually use it. You know, all the different instruments that we create to, you know, try and share a piece of something. And I think, you know, there was very much a tandem process as well, where I, in my free time, was very crypto heavy. I was reading about Bitcoin on Reddit in high school and have followed the space for a long time. Forked Bitcoin, started Tyler Coin for a international finance presentation in college.
Nice.
I've been there. I've been watching. But there came a point where I started recognizing how much those two worlds were actually colliding. Where what I was seeing with people getting increasingly more creative with their equity instruments, and then what was happening, you know, gosh, it when DAOs started to really become a thing, and you started to recognize, like, hey, they're kind of coming to meet in the middle here, and there is something bigger, about this whole shared ownership thing.
Yeah, definitely. So before we get into the Web3 and crypto stuff, because, you know, we are already sort of getting into that, we wanted to back up and talk to you about cooperatives, because it's kind of a weird space for people. Like, you know, only weird people kind of go like, hey, let's get into cooperatives. Like, we're friends with some of the big thinkers in this space, and everyone has their own sort of path into it. So, you know, it's rare to find people building in it specifically. So tell us a bit more about, how did you even get into cooperatives?
Yeah, no, it's a fun story, because a lot of people don't know how truly interesting, just from like almost an academic standpoint, that cooperatives actually are. I think a great place to start that story is, you know, how I found that transitioning from, you know, a place of traditional finance and, you know, through a client that I had. I had a longstanding great relationship with this client. They were raising money, doing some valuation work, but they did not have enough cash by any means to pay for our services. They wanted to pay us in warrants, right? That is when a lot of things clicked for me. When I recognized that I had no problem taking a phone call at 3 a.m. from that client, that I, you know, I mean, the process was incredibly grueling to actually figure it out, right? For many reasons, aside from it's just not very easy to give equity away, but because also, you know, there was some independence questions and a lot of things, but it changed how I viewed the work I was doing. And when I recognized what that could mean, when I saw that, you know, having a shared ownership is more than like, it's not charity, right? It's actually about creating better, profitable, sustainable businesses, right?
Yeah.
Because everyone actually cares. You know, went down a very deep rabbit hole of every different kind of instrument and legal structure that we could find to try and figure out how to do shared ownership the right way. And that's when I fell absolutely in love with cooperatives, because cooperatives, you know, coming from the background I do, dealing with cap tables every day, when I found out that there exists an entity that has a totally dynamic and ever-changing cap table that requires no additional agreements to be signed or anything at any point in time, it blew my mind. It just absolutely blew my mind. And, you know, that's when we met James from Oric, and he, that's kind of how it works with co-ops, right? When you get into it, there's two or three other people who are also super into it, and you start jamming about it. And then the next thing you know, it's been 9 months. you put a paper on it, right?
Yeah, definitely. Actually, so that's a good place to now come back and talk to you about how you combine the two, because, you know, you said you forked Bitcoin for a school project. That's hilarious. And then you're already doing weird internet money stuff. And then you combine the weird internet money stuff with the weird equity stuff. And you know, tell us a little bit more about that, right? I got into your white paper on digital cooperatives. We will link it in the show notes. But you know, why did you decide to combine Web3 with cooperatives? What are the possibilities that are enabled by the two that, you know, are not achievable separately?
You know, I think there's a lot of efficiencies that come from working Web3, right? Things that we all know, which I would say are 2x, not 10x improvements. Right, which is the whole reason security tokens haven't really gone on.
Sorry to interrupt you before you go on. Make sure we like to keep things super simple here. So make sure you get into all the things we know, because sometimes people don't know all the things.
Yes. So cooperatives and Web3 is an interesting topic, right? There's the obvious thing up front, which is Web3 is all about shared ownership and cooperatives are all about shared ownership. I think a lot of people just say, hey, is there any way that we can put these together and make it better? People say Web3 is just so many. Well, first of all, digital money, right? Like that enables things to move a lot faster, right? It enables people to trade and transfer, and there's a lot of interesting things that you can do because money is so like liquid and dynamic. And when you're talking about that in terms of ownership, right, everything translates over. I'd be honest in saying that I don't even know if most of us really have discovered what all of the positive, like all of the best benefits are. I think that we're in a weird spot with Web3 right now. There's been a lot of growing pains, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, what we found, Web3 cooperatives work really well just because it really enables a lot of those cooperative principles. If you look at real world cooperatives, right? Like, there's not a lot of transparency, even though that's kind of the whole point, right? There's not there's not a lot that is done when there is still people like trying to manage this business with, and in the cooperative world, often literally like fax machines and stuff like that still. But when you can translate that over and have something that's verifiable and that everyone can see. There's, you know, there's benefits to that. You can actually get better voting because it's accessible voting. You don't have to, you know, when you don't have to, you know, travel to the annual meeting. There's a lot of just the ease of use benefits with Web3 that can be, you know, incredibly helpful for cooperatives. And, you know, that's why the digital cooperative is so enticing. But
so then you specifically, you got into this because you were like, whoa, okay, I spend all my day looking at cap tables and valuations. And you're telling me that there's a way to have a kind of more fluidity in your cap table from a different organizing structure, legal structure, right? And then you're on the side, you're kind of messing around with Web3 tools and you saw an op, and I'm narrative, sort of like running with the narrative,
yeah,
here, you know, editorializing, but you kind of saw this opportunity around, hey, actually there's also the suite of digital tools that enables this cool thing, cooperatives, to be a little bit more efficient. So am I correct kind of saying that's really the idea behind why you decided to do Upside?
I mean, that's definitely the idea of what became Upside Co-op, right? Mm-hmm. We decided to do it because we wanted to make equity and the sharing of it significantly more efficient, right? Like it started 2 years ago with the idea that we were going to build Venmo for equity, right? Like that's what we wanted, frictionless, super easy, so that it actually would become, you know, economically viable, that people would start doing it, right? They would actually use their equity and ownership in a way to, you know, build better relationships and incentivize the right people. Turns out there's a lot of problems with trying to do that, right? And on the way to solving all those problems, that's just kind of where everything got picked up along the way. And now we have this.
Let's get into some of those problems before you move on, actually, because mm-hmm. I really want people to understand what are the actual problems, right? Like, you know, are the problems something like, you know, if you talk about the Venmo for equity case, it'd be fantastic if I could send Martin a couple shares of, you know, my cardamom exporting startup or whatever. I'm only saying cardamom because I literally am drinking tea with cardamom. It's the first thing that came to mind, right? But like, you know, I can't just open up an app and go like, hey, you know, Martin, I really like the podcast we run together. I'm going to shoot him a few shares of this thing, right? What stands in the way of being able to do something like that today? You know, why is that hard?
Yeah, there's a few things, functional, and then just regulatory things that stand in your way, right? So regulatory barriers being, it's not very easy, but it's not easy because there's a lot of requirements and a lot of limitations on who, often how much, you know, and for what reason people can actually get equity, right? So, you know, in the securities world, often what's used is the Rule 701 exemption, right? That's how you do employee stock options. That's how you do advisor options. And, you know, it works for a very, very specific case, right? Like Rule 701 requires that someone is providing a bona fide service, right, to a company. And bona fide service is very ill-defined in all of the literature. And so we don't even really know what that means. It's just become, you know, a standard that we just say, okay, employees, advisors, that's as far as it goes. And no one's even really tested or been tested on what they've, you know, expanded on that for. So we don't really know. That's a huge barrier, right? That means I can't give equity to whoever I want. If they're providing value, it's got to be a specific set of things that they do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, often specific set of people and specific set of contracts around that. I think the other biggest issue is just that it's very inefficient at scale, right? When you have to sign agreements every time, that's why we have time-based vesting, right? And so what, yeah, you know, what that means is that like an employee joins a company, they're going to get employee stock options. it's common that they're going to, you know, have to wait a year before any of their stock is actually earned. And then they have to wait another 3 years for that to, you know, be earned in pieces. And the only reason we do it like that is because it's so inefficient that we have to lump it all into one-time grants, right? And you know, at the base level, if you have to sign agreements, that's never going to be possible at scale.
So then if we go outside of my little toy example of splitting equity in the pod, let's pick something like Twitter, right? This has been something that Nathan Schneider talked about.
Seven
or 8 years ago, right? He's like, hey, we should make Twitter user owned. And so people are like, what the hell does that mean? It's like, well, you're basically contributing, you know, if you look at the revenue model and the valuation, by the way the Twitter is valued, is that your eyeballs posting things that get other people's eyeballs on here so that ads can be sold is a valuable activity. And if I would want to say, you, one of our, you know, most amazing users who has, you know, maybe 100,000 followers and is responsible for X amount of engagement on the platform, I'd like to give you a few shares of Twitter. What stands in the way of doing that today? Like, if you wanted to do that.
Yeah. Well, one is we don't know the definition of a bona fide service, and we don't know if that's technically a bona fide service, right? And it's hard to say, and it's hard to prove. So, I mean, that stands in the way, because the Rule 701 exemption is not going to work, potentially. The other thing that kind of stands in the way is Twitter has, you know, a few million people that you'd probably want to do that with, right? That means managing a few million people on your cap table, right? And that means managing a few million people, you know, tax related matters when you're giving it to that many people. There's issues with just even functionally getting all those agreements out and having people DocuSign them. And then you're talking about how much is that even worth, right? Like, do I care for $5 worth of Twitter stock to go sign a DocuSign, right? Like, that's the issue. Like, it limits it economically. You know, it's limited functionally. And so, you know, there's the Twitter example is great because that is just completely different, right? Like, Nathan wanted to buy it using a co-op, right? Yeah. Like, that's the beauty of it, is that, okay, we can all throw money into this co-op and, you know, potentially buy this technology that we all use every day. But then if we do that and we run this through the co-op, everything is truly dynamic, right? We remove all of the frictions that existed before, because I can just write into the software like, okay, depending on how much you use it, depending on, you know, how much ad revenue we get from showing ads to you, like anything we want, we can determine as the cooperative where the value is, and, you know, you get your piece and it's automatic, right? That's why it's so much more appealing.
Got it. So I think that kind of sets the stage, at least for...
I guess what I'm trying to understand how this structure... So maybe just backing up, and what I understand the structure to be is that effectively you have a parent company, right? So you could have an existing organization. That existing organization could have assets, could have IP. There's a set of founders and builders that are investing in that, and creating kind of the platform. And then an allocation is made to what is effectively a subsidiary, a co-op. The users have a percentage of that co-op, and the bylaws dictate how the users get access to whatever their allocation is based on the particular actions that they take as part of the entity. What I'm trying to understand here is the benefit in doing this, like is the goal here to get kind of clarity from a legal perspective, given the lack of clarity from the SEC? Is the goal because you guys believe that governance rights that cooperatives confer as part of membership are really important, whereas other platforms have divorced ownership rights from governance rights? Like, Like, what does this actually solve for as a legal structure that is not solved for by some of the other interesting kind of tools that have been out there? And maybe I'm missing this point, but like, where is the particular pain point in your eyes that this structure solves for? So A, did I get the structure right? And B, like, how do you see this? Like, what's the real need here that this particular entity is solving for?
Yeah. You're very close, right? If you take that co-op, right, like the subsidiary kind of, as you called it, and you scale that across, you know, let's say, hey, we've got this community, they're using one app and there's another app that's a complement. You know, what if we together then go and move to that and service both of those businesses as community, right? And earn equity in both of those businesses. It turns out, A, you can use what are referred to as allocation units, right? Or a business unit where the you know, patronage that one member of the co-op gives to one company can guarantee that the ownership that is earned as income from that company, right, goes back to them through that allocation unit and not, you know, to the co-op as a whole, right? Like that they are still getting their piece. And then that, by nature, you can do one, you can do two, you can do three, you can do four, right? Like it scales infinitely. That is what Upside Co-op is. Upside Co-op is a co-op that exists to give people access to Upside in a way that they haven't had access before. By doing that, right, we scale, first of all, unlike every other solution there is here, we take on the entire administrative burden, right? We are the ones who are giving ownership of the co-op itself to the users, right? And so we handle all the taxes, right? Like we do the administrative burden, we handle our own cap table, right? For a company, this is it's really about what it enables for a traditional company, a traditional brand like a Delaware C Corp, right? Like they can give us a restricted stock unit agreement and sign a platform license, and like that's it now. Now they have fully dynamic, like performance based, meaning, you know, results oriented is how it's earned. The ownership's earned rather than, you know, being time based. They can set whatever tasks or activities they think are useful, and like the co-op can just go for it. And we can do that across all of the companies that use the platform, right? What that does and why it's important is A, it gives governance, but it gives governance not like, you know, a token amount of governance in a company. If the co-op's gonna own 20% minority stake in a private company, that's not real governance, right? Because they don't have real voting power, especially if it's a startup, you know, where they're kind of getting voted out. So it gives them real governance, but governance over the thing that matters, right? Governance over the platform that gives them access to that upside, right? It gives them, you know, as well, it gives the company, I think more importantly, access to doing this in a scaled manner that removes every other friction, which is what actually enables someone to do it, right? Like when there's agreements flying around everywhere and all the things I've mentioned, no company really wants to use it. That's why most of these, you know, most solutions out there either cater to ways it's already being used specifically, and how do we make that a little bit better and more efficient, or it's a really difficult thing to break into the market because you're asking someone to pay for a product that is going to increase the level of work they have to do, not decrease. Okay, yeah. It.
So I think I understand it, and just bear with me, like I'm a, you know, a slightly tired, complete idiot, right? Like,
so I am the exact same thing right now. So,
so like the first thing is, effectively, the governance right is to a governance right in Upside. Am I getting that right? Okay. So effectively, this whatever the security that's issued by the existing big company, the existing C Corp. It could be an RSU. It's issued to Upside. Upside allocates that to almost like a sub cooperative for this particular user base. And based on their performance, they get essentially their part, they're essentially a squad effectively in that group and community that has been allocated that is one of several kind of concentric circles within Upside. And based on their performance in that external client, they're getting a governance right within Upside. Is that right, first of all?
Well, yeah, governance right. But I mean, we do one member, one vote. Everyone who joins, everyone has an account on the platform. They have a vote, right? That's, okay. But what they're really doing is they're earning their portion, right? Their piece of the ownership that the co-op itself is, you know, earning as well, right? Like I'll use an example. You know, we have a payments application very similar to Venmo that's, you know, back end is Web3 that's launching right now. They're doing an ambassador type program. Anyone who does a referral, someone downloads the app and loads it up with $10 or something like that, they're going to get some ownership for that because there was value in that for the company, right? So,
but they're getting ownership in your client, right? They're getting ownership in the payment app.
They're getting ownership in the sub co-op
that which has ownership in
the ownership payment. The client.
I get it now.
Exactly.
I get it. Okay.
And but it translates one to one, right? So it just flows right through.
No, it makes sense. And then in terms of let's say I'm an existing company that's valued at $1 billion. I somehow convince my venture capital board that I want to give 10% of my ownership to Upside. Because it's going to have some sort of value, which I think there will be companies like this. I think it'll be hard for larger companies to do this, but I do think that this is kind of the future or the now. That RSU is essentially issued to Upside at fair market value, right?
Yeah.
It's the only way to do this without a tax, without adverse tax implications.
So that's a good point, because there's an underlying concept that you're talking about here with, you know, some restricted stock units, depending on how they're structured, they can look like a stock appreciation right. Mm-hmm. Or they, you know, they can look like an option, right, where there is like it's a restricted stock unit, but there's still like a purchase price on it. What we use is actually just a standard cash settled restricted stock unit with performance and exit based vesting. So, okay. You know, that's a lot of terms, but what it really means in the context is, and I mean, you're right. A lot of the reasons why you structure an instrument like that is for tax, right? It's to optimize tax. The best way to optimize that is, and the one thing that we want is we want cash flow alignment, right? We want money coming in to be taxed when money comes in, not before money comes in. Mm-hmm. But, you know, with that respect, as the co-op, you know, earns their ownership, they're only earning it on that one vector. It still requires some level of exit or liquidity for them to get that payout in the end.
Right. Makes a lot of sense. I totally get the structure now. Okay, cool. Sorry, Jahad, to interrupt.
No, I think that's great because we were gonna hit this stuff anyway. But I think it's important context to then get into, like, you know, getting into the business model actually, right? So there are, as Martin said, this is the now and the future. Like, there's gonna be more and more companies doing this. So then, if you look at this from the perspective of Upside Co-op, how do you folks make money? Like, what is the actual business model?
Great question. Question I get a lot from my investors. So I think the first thing to start with here is talk a little bit about our company, how we're structured, right? Because we're all about eating our own dog food, so to speak, right? Like, our company, which is actually like holding company, is called PIFI, right? PIEFI, PI Finance. it not incredibly creative, but it's really on the nose. So it's what we're going for. You know, PyFi is the software developer, you know, is the you know, producer of template documents and all that sort of thing. Enabling all of this, and one thing that was incredibly important to us too, is that like nothing gets passed on to the user, right? The whole point of this is that the user is supposed to be getting access to something to A, earn something for the work that they already do, right? In helping build brands that they love by just sharing them even. But two, because they can now have access to that and the incentive, they're gonna do more, right? So we did not want them to be burdened in any way, right? Needs to be 100% on the client, right? Like the companies. So we charge a SaaS fee, right? And you know, that helps us keep the lights on. You could even think about it like subsidizing, but more or less we subsidize that SaaS fee by then taking, you know, just 2% of the income from the co-op, right? So payment in kind, where, you know, a lot of cooperatives that get started, right? When you have founders, you get a founder class of patronage, and, you know, often they get like 5-10% guaranteed. You know, that makes sense if you like, you are a, like the entire company is a cooperative, right?
Yeah.
You know, we are striking this funny balance in the middle, right? Where it's, we can be a real company, you know, with our traditional company. Co-ops are totally real.
Well, it's funny you say that. All of this is fake, but you know, we frame it in different ways at different offices with different pieces of paper or whatever, right? And technically it's all fake, but
yeah,
but I'm following.
yeah, legal entities, right? The grand illusion.
Yes, yes.
Taking that middle ground, and we can totally, I'd love to explain why that's important, why taking that middle ground is important.
Yeah, please, please.
You guys, I'm sure are well aware, as you said, it's doing this podcast, even being, you know, very into co-ops yourselves. It's both very happy, very sad all the time. Right. And it's sad because while there is such a, an incredible end state that we can get to with co-ops, getting there is nearly impossible. Right? Why? You can't raise money and you don't get talent, because talent wants upside and investors want upside.
Yep.
Right? And that is the 100% bottom line. And regardless of what, you know, idealistic things that all of us might think, what the best end state is, there's one thing I know, and that's, in order to get to the end state, it is unlikely that we just flip a switch and change how things work, right? We've got to like do something in the middle, but something in the middle such that it is a 10x improvement on what you have right now, right? You have to enable ownership for everybody, and you have to do that in a way that it is so enticing, the value that can be created through that, that companies want to pay you to do that, right? Like that is the only way that we're going to make this work. But yeah, going back to, I totally just lost my
No problem. Don't worry about it. I mean, we were talking about how folks make money. Well, we were basically covering,
talking about business model. That's right.
Yeah, yeah. But I think the SaaS model covers it. And what I think is really interesting is that we got into really the nooks and crannies of your legal structure and why you're structured that way, right? Which I think is interesting. And then kind of dovetail and say, from that, you know, you've pursued a particular point of view in the market and what the future of ownership needs to look like. There are a number of other competitors in this space too. Fairmint, Ownco, Cabal, there's a number of them. So how are you folks different?
Yeah. I think, well, first of all, I would say, you know, all those guys, great. The boat from Fairmint showed up into our Discord and congratulated us on the white paper, which was super cool to see. Cause you know, the boat had no idea who we were. I assume we all knew them and have, I mean, another great story actually, when they did the continuous agreement, right, for future equity, their innovation on the safe. Like, I was in the valuation world at that time. It was crazy. Everyone knew it. That was all people talked about in our space, right? So you see a lot of things getting innovated on, and yeah, people taking different, you know, different directions on how to get it done, right? I would say, you know, and we are much less focused on fundraising of any kind, right? Like, that's not really the thing that we're trying to enable. B, we want greater access and something that's functional, right? So that it truly can scale, where this is meant for, you know, something that's more automated, right? Like, I think that there is absolutely still a use case for like employee stock options, right? Because they have better tax advantages for the direct employees, right? Their advisor options are great because you're actually doing a lot of very direct work with that person, right? That individual. We're trying to enable something that is like a set it and forget it type thing that, you know, it's a program that just generates cash flow for both parties. So, you know, everyone's kind of going at very specific, ways to enable more ownership. One of the most interesting things about the co-op structure and what it allows us to do here, that you can't do if it's Rule 701, or even if you're using an equity like instrument, right? So it's not actually equity like shares, but it is kind of an equivalent value type thing. Even then, there's no way you could reward someone for like consumer spend, right? With a cooperative, we can actually do that, right? And so, you know, one thing we can do here is we can say, hey, we can turn a loyalty program into a co-ownership program.
Yeah. And I mean, to some extent, it's sort of like, I used to be an REI member, right? And so like, maybe this is the dumbest example, right? Is where you get an REI co-op, you buy a bunch of winter gear, whatever, you get, you know, you get some money mailed to your house from shopping at REI, right? That could be the simplest example. But then I think on building on top, you're kind of going in a different direction too. You're saying, well, actually we could do more. Like, we could actually not just send money to my house based on my spend. I could send you equity based on my spend.
Exactly. Yeah.
Got it. And so I think that's a pretty cool model when you walk it through. It differentiates you relative to Fairmint and a couple others. So then, and we kind of have an idea.
Yeah, but still, now. I mean, I guess there's still, sorry to interrupt you, John. The bumped model, right? So bump does that. They have kind of an interesting model around this.
Bumped
so.
Did that.
Yeah.
Which I loved. That was one of the saddest days, man. Cause their Columbia Business School paper that they did.
Yeah.
One of the best like studies that's been done for the idea of the ownership economy itself for the rest of the world outside of Web3. That they had to shut down is super sad. But
I didn't realize they shut down. Did they shut down?
Yeah, I think in January.
And do you know why they shut down?
No idea. No.
They raised a ton of money. I mean, and I forget their CEO. I was kind of talking with their CEO a year ago, and it seemed like things were going really well. I didn't realize they shut down.
I have no idea what happened. They could very well still be there, just like shutting down Bumped and relaunching, you know, in it as a different app, who knows, but Bumped itself.
Oh yeah. It's on the website. So long, pals, January 24th, 2023.
Wow. Amazing. Cause they really had a lot of traction. And what I really liked about Bumped, was, what Bumped did that was super cool. Right. And this was talked about in the paper. Was they essentially, you could decide that you wanted to, you had to pick in a particular category, right? So in a retail category, you could pick McDonald's, but not Taco Bell, right? So if you wanted to earn rewards, they essentially tied that reward to, or if you wanted to earn kind of stock, this fractional ownership in whatever the retailer that you picked, you really had to be loyal to that retailer. And I thought that was a pretty interesting innovation. Super simple, but interesting. And like you said, in this paper from Columbia Business School, there were quantitative results that show that this led to greater loyalty with that brand. So I was sad to see them go. I actually didn't know that they'd gone out of business.
I mean, we can hold out hope, you know, that they're there in the shadow somewhere, but yeah, it was sad. And the, the paper, incredible. You know, I think one of the interesting things, you know, it was getting there with the, you know, the context of like being able to select the brand that you want, you know, to have that loyalty with, and then to get like the shares from, which first bumped, you know, one of the biggest things, biggest problems here is that there is a massive amount of the market and arguably the part of the market that needs it the most that is private. And under the models, you know, being a broker dealer and all of that sort of stuff doesn't enable that for you, right? Like you needed something completely new to be able to do what Bumped was doing for a private company, right? Two, what they started doing by letting you select is like, it was allowing that user to start creating that relationship with that brand, right? Or improving, you know, increasing the level of loyalty or fandom that they have for a brand. You know, I think Lee Jin actually had a great article recently on, you know, marrying ownership with psychological ownership. I think that's an important concept here that is why, you know, I mean, there's other apps like Griffin, right? That does the, you know, earn equity for your spend type stuff. And those are really cool things, but it doesn't really create that relationship, right? Like that true, you know, fandom that we're looking for, that connection directly with the brand. And therefore, you know, if this isn't really coming directly from the brand, right? Like they're not marketing this as like, hey, we're doing this co-ownership program now, right? Like this is a part of our identity. And it comes through some other means, it doesn't feel the same and it doesn't drive the same results. You know, the fans don't do as much, right? Or the users don't end up doing as much. All it really does is increase their spend, right? When there are so many other ways in which they can add value.
Well, this is an interesting point too, because it kind of calls into play, like, you know, a lot of my background is behavioral science. And so specifically, you know, I was looking at Legion's piece, I thought she was going to take a big deep dive into intrinsic motivation and all the various like identity factors. There was nothing there, not to pick on her piece too much, but I was like surprised. So, you know, to zoom back out and look at some of the factors here, right? Especially in both worlds here, both in the Web3 world where we are financializing everything, and in when you look at just the really simplified reductionist model, like you spend some here, you get some equity there, none of it really addresses the core things around brand identity and brand affinity and brand love that even we have literature on, right? So like when you...
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, there's plenty of stuff on this where it's like, you know, I don't go and play Fortnite or Roblox because I get, you know, Roblox money. Like, not really, right? That's a part of the benefit, but really it gets, I get to express who I am, right? Like I own these characters. They're a part of me. They're all parts of my identity, right? So like that, you know, maybe the argument turns to no one is really a McDonald's person, right? Maybe there is someone out there who's like, I'm a fucking McDonald's guy. I'm not a Burger King guy, right? Like maybe
there's that guy who's a Big Mac, right? Every day
There's that one guy, right? But like,
get that man some equity, right?
Like, exactly. Please help this man out. He is
free PR.
Merging. He's merging with the desk, with the chair at McDonald's, man. But like, that's kind of the point. Coming zoom back out, like brand wise, this is the thing that I think everyone will have to contend with when they begin to move to this world of equity, where it's like there might be a trade-off in brand loyalty that you're making that you don't even know, right? Because these people are intrinsically motivated. They're not extrinsically motivated by finance specifically. And now you're financializing the relationship. So it's a really interesting take, I think, to be like, hey, you know, I was brought up in this post-commodity, you know, this commodity economy post-World War II, where I am a Calvin Klein person, right? I don't give a shit if Calvin Klein gives me shares in Calvin Klein. I am a Calvin Klein person, right? So it's like a really interesting balance. I think people, brand managers and CEOs and other people are going to have to work between saying, how do we measure this, right? Is this the thing we even understand? Some of the most sophisticated fashion brands in the world understand this actually, right? They're all constantly measuring this stuff. But you can't just kind of sit back and think that it has not a null effect, right? Now we're just going to add equity to the equation. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's something I've, you know, we think about and I've struggled with for a long time. Understanding, you know, I think that's a question we all ask ourselves, like, did the people even want it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny you say it. I have a friend who steadfastly says, dude, are you nuts? Like, why would I care about participating in the Series A of some, like, you know, random company and or whatever? Like, this is just more burden than the average person wants. And I'm like, Martin and I have talked about this. We're kind of on the other side of it. I don't know where you land on it. I think we're clear where you land on it. You're building a company in the space, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, there are definitely a lot of doubters who are like, I don't really see. Are you nuts, man? You want to, people would read 409A valuations and consider their tax implications for shopping at the bar down the street?
Yeah, no, and they, no one will. That's why the co-op's important, because we can actually do all of it for everyone now, right? Company doesn't have to do it. User doesn't have to do it. They're just going to get an output at the end of the year like you would if you, you know, use Poshmark, right? Or like any other marketplace stuff. So, yeah, I mean, it is a huge question. Like, what do people, do they want it? I think, you know, I think the bump study showed that they do. Right. For some things. Right.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, I think we know they do. I think the real question is like, how, right? How do we actually do it the right way? And, you know, I think one of those is, at least my approach is, you kind of have to redefine what equity even means, right? If they think equity, they think shares and stock, they think the stock market, right? Like that user is going to, it's going to feel more financialized, right? But if you say upside, it's a little different, right? Like that says something different to people. Everyone inherently knows what the word upside means. Yeah. And when you get upside in a company, you understand that, right? Yeah. So starting from a different point, right? But also because, you know, the co-op is so interesting, you know, we can create our own economy within this whole piece, right? Like you can turn it into essentially a loyalty program, right? Where you can redeem your points for free stuff, and your points can go up when the value of the company goes up. Like there's interesting ways to think about how to, you know, take this to the average to the average consumer so that they recognize that this is something different. It's new, but it is positive, right? That there is, you know, reason to have both that extrinsic and the intrinsic motivation. Like that already exists and we know that. Those people who are, you know, being a Calvin Klein person, you have a loyalty account, right? And you use those loyalty points, right? You never let those go to waste.
Yeah, yeah.
That is extrinsic financialized motivation, yeah, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Instead of saying, you know, hey, you're creating value by being a consumer. I'm going to give you a piece of that value that is the upside of that value. Instead, they're saying, okay, I'm going to discount it a little bit. I'm going to give you a set amount, right? A discrete amount of the value you're helping me create. And that, you know, the truth is that we really already do this. The question is now, how do we frame it in a way that it doesn't feel icky? I don't know, right? Like, that's the thing.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a good point. And I think actually it's a good point to transition to now. Can you tell us a bit more, you know, we'll round out the end of this to really focus on, like, you built this tech, you've studied the hell out of legal structures and how to do this. What is the current state of operationalizing this? So have you done pilots? Are there customers? Where are you kind of at in that entrepreneurial journey?
Well, we got our first equity on the platform 2 days ago. So
nice. Good timing.
What a wild ride, right? We've been just building and getting ready for launch. And so right now we are in the thick of like getting to that, you know, operational stage. So, you know, what it looks like right now is, I mean, we're just talking to a lot of the brands that we know. The funny thing is interest here. I have created a huge network in Web3. If you would have asked me 6 months ago who I thought was going to be the adopter here, I would have said Web3, right? Like I would have said, hey, I think the, you know, Bored Ape holders would love to have a piece of Yuga's royalties that they get.
Yeah.
Licensing
agreements. Yeah, they would. Yuga wouldn't.
Exactly. Which is why
to throw that out there. Come after me. I don't care.
That's what I found in Web3. I realized an uncomfortable truth.
Yes.
About what is happening in a lot of spaces, right?
Yeah.
I will summarize that just by saying that I am personally a little fed up with the whole token go up mentality. But anyways, it's been very surprising because there is this idea that shared ownership exists in Web3, and that's one of the core like value propositions of the entire industry, yet they don't do it legally yet. It's not compliant, and they're not actually sharing real ownership, right? Like we kind of talked about the Yuga example. And the crazy thing to me is that I found out that no one cares. And there are so many traditional Web2, if that's what we're going to call them, companies that care deeply, right? Like we talked to a restaurant chain that I am excited to probably tell everyone the name of eventually, where, you know, this is a couple of weeks ago, but we were talking to them about the different ways that this can be used. Like it doesn't just have to be consumers, right? You can use it with hourly, like frontline workers, right? Who also have a lot of barriers to being able to get equity. One, mainly because of the scalability issue, right? That's something that's interesting. And what he said was, oh my God, we've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars and 10 years trying to figure this out.
No, you're kidding me.
Yeah, like you're telling me that I can pay you a few thousand dollars, sign an agreement, and jump on a platform every once in a while and then get equity and ownership into the hands of these frontline workers. And I would say the reason it took so long is because they're, you know, within their own franchising structure.
Yeah.
A lot of weird things in certain restaurants and the way that they're structured that don't enable things the right way, right? Like rule 701 doesn't apply because they're not your employees. They're not doing work for you, right? And so like, there's a lot of weird things that happen here that don't enable it for people, and they try and solve it, right? What we try to do is abstract that piece away by saying anyone can come work with us, right? And then we can take care of that piece. So, but it's, you know, we got to see like, there is actually a lot of demand in the Web2 world for something.
That doesn't really surprise me actually. Like, cause you know, I think we had, who was it, Martin? It was Zoe Schlegel. Is that her name? I think I got it right. Yeah. So we had her on a couple episodes ago, and she started a fund that's focused almost entirely on converting family businesses to shared ownership, right? So all the ones that are kind of at the end of their life, kind of in terms of wanting to do business anymore, instead of shutting the thing down, they convert it to employee ownership, right? And so like that, I think that on that scale, there is going to be a lot of demand because there's going to be just, you know, so many of the boomer and just before, you know, even sorry, Gen Xers, but you know, some of you have businesses, right, will be on that edge where they're like, hey, I don't want to do this anymore. But I want to find responsible stewards for my business. I care about the community. I care about the customer base we built up, right? And so converting those to employee ownership totally makes sense. And I think a lot of employees would be totally up for that. I'm not actually that surprised. I mean, you said you were. I'm not that surprised being on the inside of many DAOs and how they operate and seeing how it all works. I'm like, not that surprised. A lot of people found a mechanism of accumulating wealth and not sharing it. that's kind of been the story from the beginning for a lot of wealth mechanisms, wealth accumulating mechanisms. So, yeah.
I mean, yeah, from one side of the mouth to the other, right? Like maybe I should have been so surprised, right? That's just how humans work.
And I think it's been exacerbated by the bear market conditions, right? Because if we were still sailing high at a $3 trillion, you know, market cap where people had liquidity for their, you know, DAO token that has like not almost, that's the other thing to talk about, right? It's like liquidity in both markets. Liquidity in the real world, in the stock market, market makers, all the stuff that has to happen for there to be for one of these employees that in this franchise I mentioned to be able to come in and say, I want to sell the share of this to somebody, right? Like all that stuff that has to happen in Web3 markets, it's gone, right? When you had 3x the amount of just market cap in and participants, then you have the ability to sell a shitcoin for some liquidity, right? That's the more important thing. It's not the fact that prices have fallen so much, it's that the liquidity is so low, right? And so now getting even one of those ventures, I think that's maybe one of the other things you're running into, right? Is you're like, hey, I would love to be able to expand, you know, all your DAO contributors who are here. Do you know what they're contributing? Do you know how much you should give them into an upside? And people are just like, talk to us in the next bull market, man.
Yeah.
it's kind of my take.
It is unfortunate because that is, it's exactly it. It is talk to us in the next bull market, which is such a sad cycle too, because you know what happens when we get to the next bull market? You're going to be making money and you're going to say, I don't want to share any of that right now.
Absolutely. You're going to be, can I play the tape? Can I play back the tape for you? What you said 2 years ago when we entered the next bull market. Yes. Yeah. I don't care to listen to this tape. I don't like it. I don't like it, actually.
I don't like it. Oh man, roll the tape, baby.
Yeah, it's
gonna be almost guarantee, but I can also hope that it will be different. We'll find out, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. There are definitely gonna be some folks who are interested in this. There's been good scholarship even on, like, I would call it scholarship because there's been a lot of good case studies being still done right now by other internet, by Ocean Protocol and a couple others. What is the real problem with Web3 governance? And it's not tokens, right? It's actually permissions, right? Like it actually rides a few levels up into who has what permissions for the multi-sig that controls the funds of this thing, right? And that sometimes is completely divorced from the token split in the token cap table. So that ends up being the real contention. It's almost like, you know, it's almost reflected in like the it'd be tantamount to like your board, essentially, right, in some ways, where who controls the votes for unlocking the funds of the multi-sig, right? That ends up being your battleground for actual governance. So I think before we jump off, I wanted to ask you, we talked about this, you got your first equity on the platform, right? Like, that's awesome. What is, maybe you're not at a point yet to tell us, but I'm curious to know, when someone comes into the door today and wants to be a customer of Upside, what does this process look like to get them to, you know, you just went through it where equity is on the platform finally. What was it from start to finish? What did that entail?
I mean, that's it's funny because it's a tale of two stories here. You know, one of those people we have talked to for a long time. You know, well before we were ready, and that, you know, was a guinea pig in many respects, and, you know, the process took 2 months, right? The other one, we talked to like 2 weeks ago for the first time and it was done, right? So like, what does the process look like? Well, at one point, it was a kind of a wild process. And right now, from someone's walking in the door saying, I want to do this right now. If you're really motivated and you can get your, board on a call, technically with the cash settled instrument, you don't actually have to have board approval, but I think that's a terrible idea, having a board myself. So I say, get the board on the call and get the okay first. But yeah. If you're motivated, we can get you on tomorrow, right? Like, it's you sign a couple of agreements and you pay us through Stripe.
And those agreements are basically like you're taking maybe what would be an ESOP level share and saying, we're going to put it in our holding company. We're going to create a sub co-op to hold those shares. We will manage all of that. Is that roughly what it looks like? Am I getting that right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the way it works, we take that, instrument, depending on like the standard is a cash settled restricted stock unit, right? Yeah. Vests on, you're earned on performance. It's different depending on the type of the company, if it's an LLC versus a C corp, or if it's, something else. Other things that we do are like a modified version of a profit sharing arrangement for certain companies, because that's the best way to do it right now. And because they're less exit focused and more cash flow focused, right? But either way, we've got something for whatever type of business it is. We give you the template document, you decide how much you sign it, and then we give you points, right? So you give us the shares or the equivalent. We give you a bunch of points. Then you can put those points up on the platform for just about anything that you so please that you think is useful for your company. And you can invite everyone to get an account, see what they can earn and how they can earn. We do social integrations, for like, retweeting things, Instagram stuff, up to integrating with point of sale to do it for, the community and purchasing. We integrate with referral programs and we can integrate with a lot of other different things. So you really just have full flexibility to use it however you want to and to try some experiments, right? Like you can try a campaign for a certain thing. And which I think, this is incredibly important too, because it's most of the other ways in which you share equity, you can't really experiment with it, right? Like it's an expensive experiment, right? Like you can come on to Upside Co-op and try 10 experiments and issue 10 shares and not have to worry about that at all afterwards, right? You can do different things, right? So that's kind of what we're doing with a lot of people, trying to try the experience. Exactly why you said earlier, right? Because we don't know where the perfect mix is with intrinsic versus extrinsic value.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I think you're correct to point out that it's not only, like financially expensive, it can be legally expensive too, and it can have repercussions if you don't do it right. So that's a really important point to drive home, man. Well, Martin, do you have anything else you want to dig into before we wrap it up?
No, I want to try out the platform. So how do I do that?
For real?
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah.
Awesome.
I mean, not with any equity, but I want to play around with it if it's okay.
100%. I could do that soon. We're doing our own dog fooding, right? We're using the platform. Anyone who joins and then refers a business that ends up getting the software gets 10% back in equity for the referral.
Oh, cool. Yeah, no, I'd love to play around with it. I mean, I think the legal structure is super cool. I haven't thought of it before, and so I think it's really interesting. And so I would love to play around with it. And thanks so much for coming
on. Awesome. Yeah, I really appreciate you guys having me. We'll get you into there and let you play around, because it's fun. It's fun to actually have launched a software product, right? Obviously there's a ugly baby every, so often. There's bugs everywhere. So I'm betting you guys are the kind of guys that can bear with bugs. So
we've both been there, man.
I think honestly the legal, like if you've got the legal innovation and the investment in, those are actually probably harder than building product, right? So the products will come together.
Can't confirm. It was hard. Anyways, awesome.
Cool, man. Well, I think the last thing is do let us know where we can follow your work online and follow Upside Co-op.
Yeah. So, follow us Twitter. Twitter's great. Upside Co-op, @ Upside Co-op. LinkedIn for all. Thank you so much. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Ownership Economy. Don't forget to like and subscribe.